Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay. On Wednesday, May the 7th, thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. Coming up, how Reform UK could face a rude awakening. We find out if the movie Conclave is really like what's happening in Rome right now. And the new boss of a Kent shopping centre speaks about his plans for the site. But first, the landlady of a pub in Chatham says allegations of animal neglect against her simply aren't true. This is our most read story on the website today after pictures posted on social media of several farmyard animals being kept at the wagon at Hale went viral. Many have claimed the conditions they're living in are unacceptable. Well, reporter Charlotte Phillips has been covering this story for us and joins me on the podcast now. Charlotte, firstly, can you tell us what the pictures show?
So the pictures that were posted online show several farmyard animals in their enclosures in the pub garden, with one witness describing the conditions as small and without grass or appropriate flooring.
And tell us a bit more about the animals, what's actually kept there, and what landlady Emma Pearson has said about how she cares for them.
So at the site, there are goats, pigs, rabbits, chickens and guinea pigs. The landlady says that her animals are very well loved and that they're given food and water regularly, as well as taken out on walks. She says that one of her staff members spends around 2 hours every morning making sure that all the water bowls are clean and that they're fed.
And what also happened over the weekend, Charlotte?
Over the weekend, just after the allegations were made, the landlady says that one of her goats, Custard, was found dead. She checked the CCTV the next morning and says a person can be seen walking onto the premises in the early hours of the morning, but it is not clear exactly what they're doing. She says a vet later confirmed that all three of the goats at the site had been poisoned, and she has since put up floodlights above the enclosures to act as a deterrent.
Now, finally, you have been in touch with the RSPCA. What have they had to say?
So the RSPCA says it has been made aware of the incident, but it is unable to discuss specific complaints due to legal reasons. It has reassured the public that it will look into and investigate any reports made.
Charlotte, thank you ever so much.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today, and a young man who crashed his van in Aylesford, leaving the passenger with catastrophic injuries, has been banned from driving for 5 years. Oliver Hewitt had been drinking at a pub before the collision on Pilgrim's Way and ran off without getting help. The 22-year-old from Court Road in Burham has been given a suspended sentence and ordered to pay £6,000 in compensation. He'll also have to do 200 hours of unpaid work. An inquest into the death of a woman who died in Ashford just hours after going missing from a mental health hospital has ruled her death was drug-related. Chelsea Morthouse had been an inpatient at Littlebrook Hospital in Dartford when she was let out for a cigarette. The family of the 30-year-old has previously raised concerns about her safety and say she was very vulnerable. The jury has also ruled failings in her care were a contributing factor. Pedestrians been injured in a crash involving a motorbike in Hythe. Police and paramedics were called to the A259 Seabrook Road at around 7 this morning. The man's been taken to a local hospital for treatment. Now, the leader of Medway Council has been telling us how Reform UK are in for a rude awakening as they take over control of Kent County Council. It's after their victory and last week's local election, which saw them win 57 seats at the authority. Reform's leader, Nigel Farage, has already said they'll be looking to slim down the size of local government. He also said he wants staff back working from an office rather than at home. Well, Vince Maple has been speaking to Finn McDermott from our colleagues at KMTV.
Clearly, the Reform UK party or business, whatever they are this week, they've received the most councillors in Kent. So they are going from a party of protest to a party of governance. And they'll now be held to very high standards, rightfully so, same as myself and any other administration of local authority. They talk a lot about trying to find lots of wasted money. Well, I can tell you, local government's been absolutely gutted, particularly from years of austerity under the Conservative government. There is not acres and acres of spare cash, and if that's what they're expecting, they're in for a very rude awakening. And they're talking about opening the books. The books are very openly available. Kent County Council, like any other council in the country, has regular audits, so I'm not quite sure what they're expecting to do. We've heard today from them and their party chair nationally that they're going to not have any other flags. So are they actually saying they're going to take down the Invicta flag from KCC? I find that shocking. And this week here in Medway, I'm really proud as council leader that we'll be flying the V80 flag. Does that mean that the local reform councillors are not going to come and reflect and remember on VE Day 80? Time will tell. So look, this is very early days for them. I want every council to succeed, whatever they're doing, whatever party, because local government needs good governance. These individuals have got no track record whatsoever. They don't even know each other, is what they were saying on media earlier this weekend. So look, time will tell, but they will absolutely be held to account now. They're no longer a party of protest, they're a party of governance.
I see. And what will be your message to the incoming leader who we don't yet know the identity of?
Well, firstly, as I've said elsewhere, I want to thank Roger Gough for his service. I don't agree with Roger on everything, but actually on local government reform and devolution, we have worked collaboratively along with the 12 other council leaders across the region of Kent. Look, I'll work constructively with the new leader because it's my duty to. I'm here to serve the people of Medway. Of course, there are conversations between the two upper tier authorities in the region of Kent. So I will meet with them as I absolutely have to do. That's the right thing to do. And I'll be looking on, but I'll be holding them to account. Ultimately, I want what's best for the people of Medway. I want what's best for the whole region of Kent. We've talked about devolution, and we want to make sure I'll be playing my part to get those resources and powers here. I don't even know if they support additional resources and powers coming to the region of Kent. Time will tell.
Do you think Medway Council might benefit from some of these Doge-style politics that are so prominent in the reform campaign?
Well, I don't think Reform UK, when they talk about Doge-style politics, have been paying any attention whatsoever to local government finances over the last 15 years. You know, we've had austerity, we've had cuts. Look, I can tell you, having run this council proudly for the last couple of years here in Medway, an upper-tier authority, where we're spending £1.2 million per day, on adult social care, children's social care, and housing. These are statutory services. These are not services we can choose not to deliver. And of course, for somewhere like KCC, Kent County Council, those figures are even higher every single day. That's not because they're not efficient. You know, most councils are run pretty efficiently. They've been starved of resources, and somehow saying they're going to come in and find all these additional resources to save, well, I simply don't think that's going to be possible. I think they've probably said so in the election campaign, and now they're going to have to deliver, I think, a pretty unrealistic chance of being able to do that.
You can let us know what you think by commenting on the story today at Kent Online.
Kent Online reports.
Former Kent MP Craig McKinley says his work has only just begun as he co-chairs a parliamentary group on sepsis. He's using his personal experience with the disease to raise awareness and push for urgent improvements in how it's diagnosed and treated. Lord McKinley lost his lower arms and legs to sepsis in 2023. The all-party parliamentary group has the backing of more than 120 MPs and peers. Next, and the Kent Online podcast has been hearing from a leading Kent doctor who's told us that 34 more GPs working in Kent and Medway is good, but more are needed. Health bosses say the recruitment drive will allow patients to book appointments more easily and help bring an end to that 8 a.m. scramble. Well, latest data shows just over 1,600 GPs across the county look after more than 2 million registered patients. Dr. Julian Spinks has been chatting to our reporter Joe Crosley.
I think any additional GPs are welcome, but the numbers are relatively small compared with the demand we have across Kent, and we continue to have parts of Kent where the numbers of patients per GP is extremely high, amongst the highest in the country. So it's a move towards improving the situation. The other thing is that we need to be retaining GPs. One of the problems is that more people have retired early or left because the workload has been excessive or moved to other parts of the country. And all of that means that we have to work extra hard in Kent to make sure that we've got enough GPs to meet the demand.
You mentioned about the retention. How do you keep GPs in practices when you might have that workload, especially? It's almost like a vicious cycle, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
For the last 20 years in Kent, the problem we've had is a vicious cycle in the sense that GPs come in, they start a job and then realise they're working 50% harder than colleagues in other parts of the country. And it's not something you can maintain for long periods of time. And so often after a few years, they burn out and they leave. So what we need to do, ironically, is attract more GPs and make it easier for them to stay and work on. We need to give them the flexibility perhaps to work part-time, because going full-time with enormous list sizes is really unworkable these days. We need to look at taking pressures off them, so not making them do work that there's no resources to cover. There's also the introduction of other non-GP members of the team, such as nurses and paramedics and physiotherapists and pharmacists, who can take some of the workload off GPs, leaving them to deal with the most complex cases. But it remains a major challenge that I think will carry on for some time.
What are people telling you in the industry? What are the GPs saying, and what of some of the own experiences you have with these patient to GP ratios? Because some of them are quite shocking, as we've already said.
Sometimes the situation is feast or famine. You find some practices where the ratios are pretty good and the doctors are feeling happy. You've got others where they are absolutely struggling to keep up. And at a time when general practice is trying to move to slightly longer consultation times, from 10 minutes to 15 minutes, because that is safer and better for patients and allows GPs to work a little bit longer. But that can only come at the cost of the number of appointments that are available. So colleagues are struggling to see how they can introduce that and at the same time work with lower numbers of GPs than they really need.
And how many GPs do you think it would take to try and balance our patient ratio? I know that's quite a
That's a
hard and a tricky question.
challenge to come up with. I think one way to look at how difficult things would become is to look back to when I started as a GP way back in the early 90s, when the typical list size for a GP in the UK was 1,800. The national list size now is about 2,300, and you've got ones going over 3,000 in places like Medway and Swale. And every person on that list, on average, sees their practice 7 times a year. So you could see that the workload you need to match to keep up is enormous. And of course, we're in a county where there is a population growth of around 10 to 15,000 people per year. So you've actually got to have another 7 or so GPs every single year just to match that population increase.
You can let us know what your experience is like by emailing news at thekmgroup.co.uk. Figures from the RSPCA show Kent has seen a rise in the number of young wild animal admissions to wildlife centres. There were 97 reports across the county last year. The charity has now released a series of videos showing people how they can help injured or orphaned young animals. Plans to demolish Tides Leisure Centre in Deal are expected to be voted through next week. It's all part of a multi-million pound renovation project that will see a new 6-lane pool built, as well as a new gym and toddler splash pad. The project is due to be finished in the summer of 2027.
Kent Online reports.
Now, the process of choosing the next pope has officially started today in Rome. 133 cardinals have gathered at the Vatican for the centuries-old process of voting for the next leader of the Catholic Church. They'll be kept from all contact with the outside world until the decision is made. We'll know a successor has been chosen when white smoke comes from a chimney on top of the Sistine Chapel. Well, I've been speaking to Professor Bob Bowie from Canterbury Christchurch University.
It's an extraordinary moment in the life of this sort of global organisation, where from all corners of the world, wherever there is a sort of a Catholic population, cardinals come together in Rome. Rome becomes this sort of central focus. And through this, sort of ancient but also democratic process of deliberation to choose the next spiritual leader of, the 1.4 billion Catholics in the world, but also, of course, choosing a leader will be very prominent figure in the world for everybody. The popes are not just figures for Catholics now, but are also figures for political leaders as well. So it's a sort of a real extraordinary moment in the life of the church.
And it literally is a vote. There'll be several votes until they have an overall winner, as it were. This could take some time, couldn't it?
That's right. It has to be resolved through that process. And when you imagine the sheer range of countries where Catholics are found, and sort of cultural diversity that's within that room is quite extraordinary. It's an interesting moment to because they have to reach an agreement. They have to reach an agreement for another pope to be elected. If we've watched the movie Conclave, we've seen a really fascinating impression of that. But it is that process, and it cannot. You know, so they're locked in. They are allowed out to go to bed in the evening. You know, they're not actually sort of stuck in the Sistine Chapel sort of permanently. But they do have to make that decision.
How realistic do you think Conclave was as to far as these discussions going on kind of amongst each other and who politically would look good to be Pope, and those saying, I want to do it, and others saying, no, I definitely don't want to do it? Does that sort of thing really happen?
I mean, the film was a great drama, right? So it's a terrific movie, and the church is a complex entity. It's things have changed from a time when it was heavily dominated by, let's say, a European perspective. It is a much, much more global perspective. And as is often the case, the last pope will have made new cardinals. So Francis will have made new cardinals who won't have all come together in quite this way yet. So there will be unknowns who'll be present in the choice, in the selection. And sometimes we get a simple concept that's used to try and present, are they conservatives or liberal? But actually, it's a much more complicated thing than that, because you're talking about a religion which expresses itself with liturgy, and that's one aspect, but also ethics, that's another, and theology. You know, so you have a sort of a much more nuanced set of complexities, and of course, you know, you've got a world which is a wider world, which is also looking at Europe differently from perhaps the past. And maybe, you know, there's been a lot of speculation about, you know, will we see another pope from the global south? Will we see a pope from Asia? Will we see a pope from Africa? You know, there has been a change from the time when it was much more likely to be European. I think all of those conversations and languages and all of that element will be happening in, I'm sure.
Kent Online News.
Plans have been unveiled for a multi-million pound redevelopment of a Kent shopping centre. The Forum in Sittingbourne was sold to a new owner last December. They want to introduce more restaurants and cafes, as well as building 74 flats on the roof of the building. It's thought work will cost around £6 million. Kamil Farid is Vanguard's new owner and director. He's been speaking to our reporter, Joe Crosley.
The Forum Shopping Centre is in the heart of Sittingbourne, very close to the high street, very close to the train station, very close to the main bus station in Sittingbourne. So the location was very iconic. And for us, this project was a very big challenge, because there was 9 vacant units. And since our takeover in December, and we are now here in the beginning of May, there's only 4 vacant units left, so we are renting them as we go. Our plan that we want to really redevelop the shopping center as much as we can, make the shopping center lively, make it a good place for families and all the people in the community to come here and enjoy their time, weekday or weekend. And we also have very big plans to add around 74 units on the top of the shopping center. And this for us is to convert it from just a normal shopping center in the heart of Sittingbourne to be a major mixed-use development where you have on the ground floor blue chips tenants like Costa, New Look, Peacocks, and a lot of other tenants. And in addition to this, we have on the top floors big residential development, which will definitely serve the community, especially the location, especially very close to the main train station, bus stop, and the high street.
Well done. Well, you've covered that pretty well. just one thing. Obviously, you know, online's massive. How are you guys going to kind of cope with that challenge with online shopping? What sorts of things are you going to be looking to bring in, or, you know, what can you do to kind of cope with that?
So as it stands now, we are focusing on major retailers to come to our shopping center. We are also focusing on adding some F&B. And you cannot really get F&B online. So that is our goal. We want to attract higher number of footfall into the shopping center. The only way to do this is by attracting shops that you cannot find online. Since our takeover, we have added a Samba shop. We have added a pie and mash shop and some other shops. So you cannot really find these shops online, especially pie and mash. There's no pie and mash shop in anywhere in Sittingbourne. So we are trying to focus on the shops or the industries or the types of retailers that you cannot find them around. Just trying to not compete with online.
Elsewhere, a couple who are refurbishing a rundown pub in Margate insist plans for a late night licence won't cause more antisocial behaviour. Matt and Vicky Stevens are reopening the London Tavern on Addington Street and could stay open until 2 a.m. between Thursday and Saturday and 1:30 for the rest of the week. Neighbours have raised concerns about noise and crime, but the owners say that's not the case. And there are plans to turn a former coal yard next to Pluckley Railway Station into a 20-space car park and five new homes. The derelict plot of land has been earmarked for development for several years, but previous applications have been rejected. There have been 18 objections to the latest proposals, with some residents concerned about extra traffic and safety.
Kent Online Sports.
Football first up, and two Gillingham players have signed new contracts to stay on at the club. Midfielder Robbie McKenzie, who acted as captain for a lot of games this season, has committed to another 2 years with the Gills, while goalkeeper Glenn Morris has also signed a one-year deal. At 41, he's the oldest player in the Football League, but boss Gareth Ainsworth has confirmed he's part of their future plans. Well, Glenn has been speaking to the club's media.
Obviously really pleased. It's nice to get it done early, and you can sort of relax over the summer and enjoy your time away and look forward to next season.
Yeah, that must help. You're not worrying about all off-season, about you're on a holiday, you're checking your phone, what's going to happen next. It's all done and dusted. You know where you're going to be.
Yeah, you can sort of mentally switch off now. You can, you've done your work in the season and got the contract sorted, and you can enjoy your summer, like I said, with your family and not have to look at your phone every 5 minutes.
I suppose you did on Saturday, having won Player of the Year again. That's the second time in three seasons here. I think you won it four times at Crawley, so you're no stranger to that award.
Yeah, it's a strange one. It's obviously... It's an award that you win as a goalkeeper if the team's sort of down the lower end of the table, shall we say. And it's one of those, I've managed to pick it up, but I don't look at them. I'd much rather us be at the top of the league picking up a collective award as a club rather than an individual one for me.
Tennis now, and Kent's Emma Raducanu gets her Italian Open campaign underway today. She's taking on Australian 19-year-old Maya Joint, who's been described as a rising star in the sport. The British number two from Orpington will be looking to bounce back from her second round exit at the Madrid Open. And finally, in boxing, a female coach from Dover has claimed victory in an international event in Luxembourg. Shanice Jenner took home the trophy at the boxing club after defeating her German opponent on Saturday. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. Plus, you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, you just need to head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. And if you use the promo code Nicola Everett, all one word, at the checkout, you'll get £30 off the price of an annual subscription.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.